Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner. The last time she was on the program, it was about 100 days into her administration. A lot has happened in Syracuse since then, so much that we're going to continue the conversation we start here today next week. Mayor, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back.
Well, let's start with the city's financial situation. In recent months, you've been something of an evangelist or a town crier about the city's dire finances, not just currently, but going forward long term. You've also formed an advisory board and recruited the help of former Lieutenant Governor Richard Ravitch. You just hosted a meeting with some other upstate mayors to discuss the issue and to begin a planning process, as I understand it. So I wanted to ask you first a basic question about this. From the spending side and then from the revenue side, what are the structural problems confronting the city?
Well, it's really very fundamental. You can no longer support services on a property tax base in upstate New York, and I would argue in any city in the United States. When you start looking at the cost that education, public safety, and health care costs us, it far outstrips our ability to raise revenue on the property side of it, but also outstrips our ability to keep enough revenue coming from sales tax and other things to pay for those costs. And a lot of those costs, in fact, all the costs that I just mentioned, with the exception perhaps of health care, are mandated by the state. The state says we have to have a certain amount every year, so-called maintenance of effort for our school district, so that's mandated. The state has said that the public safety unions, because they don't have the ability to strike, have the benefit of binding interest arbitration, which effectively allows an independent third party to set the terms and conditions and wages of both police and fire. And so we don't have any ability to really negotiate like you would with our other unions or perhaps the issue that I'm most familiar with in the private sector. We cannot talk about or effectively advocate and say, you know, our municipality's ability to pay is such that these awards outstrip our ability to provide other services. What you're seeing going on in the country is that discussion happening right now in places like Scranton and Stockton, California. And what I have done in working with my fellow mayors in New York State is saying this is on our horizon, not the long-term horizon, the short-term horizon. So let's talk about it now. Let's talk about the trends, what's affecting them, and let's have a conversation about how we move forward and solve this so that we can solve it before it becomes the kind of outright crisis that you are seeing in Stockton, California, and in Scranton, Pennsylvania, which, as a mayor, is frightening to see what is going on in those two cities.
There were two things that you mentioned I wanted to follow up on. First of all, you mentioned the inability of the property tax mechanism, really, to pay for these things. So my understanding is that about half of the commercial property in the city is nonprofit and therefore not part of the tax base. Is that right?
Half of all the property. It's like 56%
of all property. Okay. So question about that is that, and you mentioned trends, is that a reflection of the erosion of for-profit activity in the city over the years, or is it just a growth in the nonprofits?
Well, it depends on when you start your analysis. If you start your analysis in 1950, or if you look at the history of upstate cities in particular, our history, we grew up around large manufacturing plants. Carrier, the classic example. As the economy has changed, the kind of jobs that we get produce, frankly, more income tax than they do property tax. And so as our economy has changed, while we still have manufacturing, and I think that we have great hopes of having a lot more manufacturing, I think the idea that we're going back to these massive plants that paid these huge property taxes is something that's a bygone era. We, similar to General Motors and the auto industry, have legacy costs, pension costs in particular. And those decisions were made by admirable people for moral reasons and reasons which I understand and agree with. But we're at a position now we can't pay for them based on the cost structures. And they probably thought at that time defined benefit would always exist, that health care would always be cheap. And those two areas have completely changed. Health care is growing astronomically. And unlike pensions are growing exponentially as well. But pensions will cap out and they'll plateau. What we're seeing with healthcare is it's not going to do that. And that, you know, again, at a certain point, it just becomes math.
And you mentioned the fact that many of those obligations then are state mandated. So that leads to the other follow-up I wanted to ask, is that it would be great, obviously, to get all the money that the city needed from the state. But realistically, what are the things that the state could be doing to help you in this situation that it's not currently doing?
Well, I think that there are a list of things that run the gamut, from changing some of the legislation, changing the Triborough Amendment to look at compulsory binding interest arbitration, to add into that that an arbitrator has to weigh the municipality's ability to pay an award and provide other services, to add some more balance into the negotiating. Because right now, and I'll tell you, I have never met a mayor in New York State that believes that a city has ever gotten a fair deal from a binding interest arbitration award. And the police union has overwhelmingly gone to binding interest arbitration since the law was changed in the 70s. So you would think if it was a fair and balanced system, it would be 50-50. Half of the time they negotiate, half of the time they go to binding interest arbitration, no, they go straight there because their history is such, it's a smart move. You're going to get a better deal from the arbitrator. And so if the arbitrator, but let me give you an example. For every 1% for police that the arbitrator says you get a 1% award, that's $1 million to our bottom line. If everything stays the same right now, no pay increases, everything stays the same, I have to raise an additional $8.5 million every year to just stay even. It's $3.5 million for pensions, I believe, or $3.5 million for health care and eight for pension, or $5 million for pensions.
Well, are there things then that the county or the surrounding villages and towns could do to help that they're not currently doing?
Well, I have been very fortunate in that our county executive has really been a fantastic partner. And so we have done a lot of shared services. We've consolidated the purchasing department. We have a joint economic development office. So in every way that where we have seen the opportunity, we have gone down that path of examining it, analyzing it, and fully implementing consolidations or shared services when we can. But there is a fundamental difference between the services that the county provides and the services that the city provides. So education, police, and fire, the three most expensive services that I provide. Fourth would be DPW. Onondaga County does not have an education system, so they don't pay for that as a county. They don't have a professional fire department. It's all volunteer. And the sheriff's department is separate and apart and different from Onondaga County. They have a separate elected leader. So for people to say, and I understand because it's kind of like, oh, wouldn't it be easier if they just consolidated and we had one mass government? No, because we have two wholly individual and separate functions where we do have some overlap. We have looked at that. But the other fundamental issue too here is that the same trends that are impacting the city of Syracuse are also impacting Onondaga County. When I say we have legacy costs, Onondaga County has legacy costs as well. The difference is Onondaga County, relatively speaking, is much younger than the city of Syracuse. So their legacy costs are not as big. But if nothing changes, Onondaga County will be in the same place that the city of Syracuse is in. And as an example, right now, Suffolk County has declared an emergency, financial emergency. Nassau County is in a financial control board, and Rockland County has also declared a fiscal emergency. So counties are being affected just like cities are.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Syracuse City Mayor Stephanie Miner. Well, let me put a little sharper edge on that question about what villages and towns are, I guess in terms of what I'm about to ask, what people living in those villages and towns could do to help that they're not currently doing. The idea of a commuter tax comes up from time to time, and Richard Ravitch, who you've enlisted to help you think about the city, has supported such a tax for New York City, for example. And the argument for it, as I understand it, is that there are many people who drive into the city to work, but otherwise, beyond lunch and parking fees, they don't have much direct role in supporting the governmental infrastructure that provides them and their families with that livelihood. And at the same time, the city has a higher concentration of poverty and greater needs, which you just a second ago outlined in some different ways. So there's a geographical fairness issue there, too. So what's your view on a commuter tax for Syracuse?
I'm not in favor of a commuter tax. I think it would be the death knell for the city. We already struggle right now in recruiting and keeping our businesses in our city. Because one of the key differences, obviously there are a lot, between New York City or Yonkers for that matter, and Syracuse, is that it is very easy to walk across and cross lines. So parking is a huge issue for us. And people in central New York don't want to pay for parking. And if we all of a sudden said, you got to pay for parking and you have to have a commuter tax, you would see them say, why do I need to be in the city? We'll just go to these huge industrial plants and, you know, campuses that I think are boring. And from the people I've talked to, most people would prefer to be at some place where they can walk outside their dorm, walk to lunch and walk on the creek walk and do things like that. But we would be immediately at a huge competitive disadvantage. So it wouldn't work the way that we think. I think that some of its proponents think it would because of the uniqueness of Syracuse. And, for example, right over the line is DeWitt.
Well, are there any other places then that the city and cities like Syracuse can go for revenues, or have all the available sources been mined at this point?
No, I think that there always are, but I think that the better way to approach the problem is to look at the entire system and structure. So instead of looking at, geez, where can we find another $2, to look at it and say, is the fundamental structure how we support our city governments, does it not work anymore, and should we look at that?
Well, you didn't mention, and we haven't talked about Destiny yet, and there's been a lot about it recently due to it publicly declaring that, for now anyway, it's a mall expansion. First question, have you been inside the expansion recently?
No.
Okay. On this next question, for the record, I want to state that I asked Robert Congell and David Akin to come on the program, and but they declined, so I can't ask them this next question. I'm going to ask you. Destiny has suggested that if future conditions improve, some of the original grander plans for it might be pursued. I was curious to know what you think the chances of that are, say, in the next 15 years.
I don't think it's going to happen. I think that that is more fiction to try to absolve themselves of what they promised this community.
And that leads directly into the next thing then that I wanted to ask you, was a lot of the traffic on the internet and in the letters to the Post Standard and in editorials and in articles in the paper seem to focus on, at this point anyway, assessing blame for the whole saga and the ultimate outcome. So, first question, do you ever just want to say, maybe just a little bit, hey, I told you so?
I don't. You know, it was a very, it was a very... a learning experience, and one in which I am grateful that I was able to go through, because it taught me a lot about myself and about relationships with other people. And I formed some great friendships out of the foxhole that was the anti-Destiny group of people. But it was a very painful experience. And, you know, saying that or thinking that does not in any way relieve me of what is a profound sadness about what this community went through and was promised.
I want to come back to that, but let me ask a couple other questions on this topic. Do you think that, and thinking about the paper, do you think that since this was such a big public policy issue for the city and the paper is such a proponent of accountability and transparency, that at this point it could do a better job of examining itself and its retelling of the Destiny story?
I do. I mean, I have to tell you, I find it ironic that the paper is going through this, you know, what happened, why did it happen, when they were, they lit the match and threw it on the gasoline of the fire. And look, I've said that to the editors, and I've said that to the reporters who have called me about it and talked to me about it. I've said, don't you feel a little bit embarrassed to be asking me these questions? Or, you know, the immediate aftermath, well, how could this happen? And they said that to me, how could this happen? How could you say to me, how could this happen? I mean, it's a richness that I never thought I would experience.
And last on this particular aspect of it, you've already, I think, given me the answer to this, but I want to ask it anyway. Do you think that the people at the head of this project ever seriously thought that they'd be building an indoor aquarium and recreation area, a performing arts center, a golf course, artificial lake, the rest of it?
I don't, and because of this experience in particular, I have long since ceased trying to delve what people's actual and real intentions are. I think that's a very, you know, that the human mind can convince itself of many things. But I think that the policymakers and the people who made decisions on this project had a responsibility to assess whether those commitments that they made very flippantly were actually in the documents. And that wasn't done. And the newspaper didn't do that. Elected officials didn't do that. Everybody stood around and had these great press conferences and slapped each other on the back and demonized people who stood up and said, hey, wait a second, the commitments don't match the promises. And, you know, and here we are how many years later. And again, it is less than satisfactory to be in this position. And as a consequence, you know, there are a lot of good things about being mayor of the city of Syracuse. And one of the best things about it is that I have challenges every single day. So it's I just focus on moving the ball and moving ahead and not thinking about regurgitating the past, because it doesn't do me any good and doesn't do, I think, our community or it doesn't do me personally any good, and it doesn't do the city any good for me as the leader of the city to engage in that. However, I think that there is a benefit if the community does engage in this process in a thoughtful and meaningful way.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations, and my guest is Stephanie Miner, the mayor of Syracuse. I wanted to follow up on what you just said there, and you also mentioned the richness of some of the ironies in the story before. I've often thought that the story of the Destiny Project would make a great book or a dissertation as a case study of power and politics and on local town, and you could spend a chapter just on the name Destiny, for starters. But stories like this, when they're told, usually say something about the place that they happen in. And so what does the Destiny saga say about us?
I think what it says is that our leaders were so desperate for magic solutions to really entrenched systemic problems like a lack of economic development that they were willing to take uneducated risks and hold their breath and hope that the best happened instead of engaging in saying, you know what, we have to be responsible. We have to look at this. If it sounds too good to be true, it is too good to be true. I think that this is a case of a modern-day robber baron. And, you know, it's a very, for me, very, there are parallels between what happened here and what happened to our country in the progressive era.
Do you think that this experience is going to have an effect down the road when another project comes up or there's another issue where people can map destiny onto it, rightly or wrongly?
It already has. Yeah. I mean, everything has become, oh, this is like destiny and this is like destiny. And again, the richness of the irony is some of the people who are saying that were the biggest proponents of destiny. So, of course, it will. It will color how people choose to analyze it. It'll color how people choose to make arguments. But I think the important part for our community, and this is a responsibility of our leaders in our community and people in our community, is to say, wait a second, that the Destiny name doesn't fit all cases. And it's important to keep that in mind now, that it doesn't just become an aspersion that people cast on something because they're not in favor of a project.
Well, you mentioned it already having an effect. And one of the things I had in my mind, obviously, was the recent case where it seems to have had this haunting effect on the consideration of the 30-year pilot agreement, that's payment in lieu of taxes, regarding the new Syracuse University bookstore. And that agreement was recently approved by the city council on a 5-4 vote. And the counselor who cast the deciding vote said immediately afterward that the vote was too painful for him to talk about. What are your views on that project and how it was affected by all this?
Well, it was completely different from Destiny. What we had here was a case where if we did nothing, then the institution, the nonprofit, in this case Syracuse University, could have built it themselves and paid a fraction of property taxes on just whatever they put in there that was for profit. And in fact, they could have put nothing in there. They could have structured it in such a way very easily that every entity that they put in that bookstore was nonprofit and it would pay no taxes. And so we had a choice. On one level, we had a choice between 30 years of money and zero. That's pretty easy, as opposed to the Destiny, which was you are guaranteed property taxes or zero, and the community leadership took zero over the property taxes.
And plus, I guess there's not the issue of will there be anything at all. I mean, it's pretty clear that something's going to go.
Correct. Yeah. But for me, the much more important part of this project was when you look at where our economic development is happening, it's happening with our nonprofits. They are the engines of our economic development. And what we did in this is set a precedent that when economic development happens with a nonprofit, that we are guaranteed a certain percentage for, let's call it a service percentage, or what we pay for services that those nonprofits provide. So from now on, when a nonprofit comes to us and says that they want to expand or they can do it in a way that's quicker if they lease it to a private developer, we've set the standard that says, it's not going to be all or nothing. You're going to have to pay a certain service fee. So from my mind, this was a win-win. It was a win because we got 30 years of guaranteed revenue where we could have gotten nothing. And we also set a precedent that economic development for nonprofits, which is our strongest area of economic development, there's going to be an expectation that they pay for services in that. Now, was it a 30-year pilot? Yes. And was the was Destiny a 30-year pilot? Yes. But, you know, I think our community is smarter than to stop the analysis at that level.
And lastly on that issue, and lastly for today, a lot of the hoopla over Destiny was its green aspects. And an emphasis on Syracuse being green has been a theme of many people working on city issues, yourself included. And my sense is that with the economic downturn, there's been perhaps a toning down on that initiative in order to deal with more immediately pressing challenges. I could be wrong about that. But I do wonder whether the Destiny saga will make people more skeptical about efforts to tie development to being green. Do you have any concerns about that?
I don't at all. And in fact, I have not seen a downturn at all. People are very concerned and excited about the idea that we are a leader in the sustainability movement, about having their buildings being LEED certified. And we have continued to see a real excitement and enthusiasm for that, coupled with what we are doing in terms of green infrastructure that the county executive is leading and that we in the city are an important part of, because most of those green infrastructure improvements are happening within our borders. And so just the opposite. It continues to be a priority of my administration, and we are seeing actual improvements made and actual physical changes made in our community and emotional changes in how we think about development now.
That was Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner. There are no three questions this week because I'll be speaking with her again next week about politics in the city and the state. So she gets a whole week to think about those three questions. Mayor, thanks so much for talking with me.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.